In our study of Ecclesiastes, and we are in chapter 10, but we stopped a moment just to remind ourselves that the issue, Solomon, who has a wisdom as none other, human wisdom and knowledge, that he's hitting it from a under the sun window. And as we look under the sun, on planet Earth, not looking up, looking down, then all the wisdom and all the knowledge is never sufficient. It never does the job. It can't do the job. So, now we're just swinging as we're in the chapter 10 to remind ourselves, Solomon, God is using Solomon, who he has given all of this special knowledge and wisdom. God is using him to what? To remind us that since all human knowledge and all human wisdom is totally insufficient, then we need to look to God. So, Ecclesiastes chapter 1, to remind us. In Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verse 16, I communed with mine own heart, saying, Lo, I am come to great estate, and have gotten more wisdom than all they that have been before me in Jerusalem. Yea, my heart had great experience of what? Of wisdom and knowledge. I had wisdom and knowledge. Over to chapter 2. Chapter 2 and verse 26. For God giveth to a man that is good in his own sight, in his sight wisdom. I'll read it again. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge. God gives that and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit, the chasing of the wind. Chapter 7. So God gives the knowledge, humans, Solomon was given special wisdom and knowledge. God gives wisdom and knowledge. But the wisdom and knowledge is to discover that all our wisdom and knowledge is not sufficient. Thus, chapter 7. In chapter 7 and verse 12, for wisdom is a defense and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. So God said, I give it. Do you learn anything from knowing and wisdom? Do you know anything? Now, one other place as we go over to Romans chapter 11. In Romans chapter 11, we have the two words. And I would remind you that wisdom makes use of knowledge. And wisdom uses knowledge. Thus, chapter 11 and in verse 33. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God. Human wisdom and knowledge is to get us to know God's knowledge and wisdom. How unsearchable are his judgments, and his ways past finding out. God's knowledge and wisdom. So it's superb, it's superior, it's beyond all that we can ask or think, his knowledge and wisdom. So we need to know human limitations of knowledge and wisdom. We only know so much. And you know the illustration we have in our little ad we do that ever. If you went to all the millions of volumes in the Library of Congress, millions of volumes on everything and anything, and what percentage would you know? As you walk through the door, what percentage of knowledge would anyone know? The smartest person in forever. What would you know? Wow, it's too much. too much to know. So God, your wisdom and knowledge is past finding out. So I want to know that, so as I think about it, I'm going to be able to compare my human knowledge and wisdom, which exhausts itself in trying to find out any solutions to human life and human benefit. Then, God, I'm going to have to look to you, and your knowledge and wisdom is beyond me. So I want to understand that. Over to Psalm 139. Psalm 139. And thus, looking at knowledge, God's knowledge. And if you would, picking up in verse 1, getting a little sense of the context, David is going to tell us his wonderful exercise and experience with God. Verse 1, O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. You have searched me and known me. And the word search, you're going to see it again at the end, is to dig through, to find out something by minute persevering investigation. By minute persevering investigation. To search diligently, to take everything apart that you could take apart to discover what something is, to learn about it, to as much as you could do it. Now, thou hast searched me, that's the word, and to know me, which is going to be to know me, God's knowing. And the word know means to see, to perceive with the organs of our sense, to see, touch, taste, smell, to separate sharply by the eye, the idea to distinguish, to divide, to separate, and thus to experience the relationship, a relationship, God, that you make possible because you know it all. You search the heart, and you know, not only do you search and take everything apart, but you know everything that you take apart. You know it. You absolutely know it, God. Absolutely. And it causes and makes for us, how could God relate to us, finite? How can the infinite relate to the finite? Because God knows. He searches and knows. He knows. He absolutely knows. Without any question. Thus, in verse 2, thou knowest my sitting down and mine uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. So here you're looking in the light of that. And picking up, please, in verse 4. For there is not a word in my tongue, but, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. So there's no words that ever come out of the mouth of a human, that God doesn't know the words before they ever come out. Picking up, if I can, in thought, in verse 5, to get us, thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. Too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain unto it. And we just read God's wisdom and knowledge is past finding out. God has all knowledge all at once. And David said, where am I going to go to get away from it? Verse 7, whither shall I go from thy spirit, or whither shall I flee from thy presence? God, you know, and such knowing is too wonderful. It is extraordinary for me. It is beyond my ability to grab it, to get a hold of it, God. I just can't do it. Verse 14, I will praise thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. I am fearfully. Now, David, did you have Gray's Anatomy? What did you have? David just knew the body, the wonderful body that God has given us, the miraculous body. And without all the pharmaceutical, without all the hospital, they knew their body functioned and they were very conscious of their body. We are not conscious of our body as much as they would be because we have all kinds of aspirin and everything to take. So we never know the power of the body to heal, to recover, to go through whatever. We quickly cut it off. We got pain, we take pain medicine, and the pain's gone. We have a problem and we take it, and it disappears so that we're off the hook. Think if you didn't have that, and you went through, and your body, you were used to your whole body functioning in its full magnificence, you see. And you know yourself, if you take the antihistamine, whatever you do, and if you take that, then what it does is it tells your normal function to relax, right? And then it says it gets lazy. So now when you stop taking whatever it is for your sinus or something, and you say, boy, I still have it. No, you don't have it. It was up there resting, and it went to sleep. It looked at itself and said, hey, we might as well take a nap. So it took a nap. And now that you stopped, you have to wake it up again. You have to wake it up. So if you keep taking it, when's it going to wake up? You know, you want to make your body work in a healthy way. And that's what God made it for, isn't it? All the other stuff is to be in there to compensate as best we can. But your body is a magnificent vehicle. David said, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." And God, I know that. I know that you know, God, that you have done something wonderful that is beyond my understanding. And even with all our grand knowledge we have comparatively today of the body, human body, the human body, it's beyond. We know it, but we don't know it. And when you start talking about trillions of cells, I mean, what's a trillion cell? I know $1 trillion is nothing, but what's a trillion cells? A trillion cells, and they're changing every day. They're right now, they're all dying and replacing themselves. And how do we grab that? We don't. We do the best we can with it, physically, surgically, whatever, pharmaceutically. But we don't know. It's too much. We're fearfully and wonderfully made. Verse 23, search me, here as in verse 1, search me, O God. Search me, and O God, and know my heart, try me, and know my thoughts. So I'm looking for God to exercise his knowledge. Looking for God, so I'm looking to God to search, and to know, to examine, to investigate the minutest detail, which he knows. And I'm going to relax with that because God does know. So I'm not going to be sitting there hoping he doesn't discover something when he's already discovered it. So I need to know it's already known. So if I sit there and say, I hope I can hide it from God, God already knows. So I start with that. If I don't start with that, then something God doesn't know. Well, what is it that God doesn't know, you see? What is it that God doesn't know? So, in the light of that, be ready, relaxed, take it easy. Don't deny he doesn't know. He does know. Don't discard what you do know that God knows, and don't discount it as make it as nothing. And thus, and try me, verse 23, put me to the test, prove like metal, fire, cause to glow, to purify, put me through the furnace, try me and know my thoughts. Well, God already knows, and the whole purpose of the knowing, remember, David 24, And see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. God, I want you to search me, search my heart. I want to see, I want to look after. I want to be in the way. I don't want to get in the place where that which is going to get me be a grief to me. God, I want you to search it out. I want to know it. I want to understand it. And you'll find the Apostle Paul saying, and thus in his wonderful development in prison, Roman prison, he'd say, Philippians 3, that I may know him and the power of his resurrection. It's a business of knowing God, because God knows everything. And God understands everything perfectly, completely, infinitely, fixed, absolute, and yet absolutely fixed and flexible. Absolutely fixed and flexible. See? Instantly, already, forever. Everything is fixed, flexible, absolute. The knowledge of God. God's simultaneous knowing, simultaneously knowing it all. Nothing missing, no vagueness, exhaustive knowledge. Nothing's missing, no ignorance. Never forgets, never increases, never decreases. He never has to gather any knowledge, he never has to get any knowledge. Always true, always real, always right, always accurate, always correct. No deductions, no inductions, no mistakes, no errors, or none. Perfect knowledge all at once. Psalm 147. David said, search me, God. Solomon said, listen, if you're going to do it and you're going to use your human wisdom and knowledge, when you're all done, you're going to have to go and say, listen, it is so limited and so unable, we're going to have to look to God. Thus, Psalm 147, and picking up in that wonderful statement, verse 5. Psalm 147:5. Great is our God, and of great power. His understanding is infinite, so endless, perfect understanding. That's why we trust him. But I have to get to the place where I'm not trusting myself and my knowledge and my wisdom, because I don't have all the. How many pieces do you have? You got a couple of pieces. God has all the pieces, and God already knows them. So it isn't a question of, I don't want to deal with God because I don't want to understand that he does know. I do want to understand that he knows. I do want to understand. I do want to get to the God who knows. If anyone is able to come to my rescue, it's him, because he knows. Now, in the light of that, Isaiah 46, God's wonderful knowledge and wisdom beyond our understanding. Chapter 46 of Isaiah, picking up, please, in verse 10. Declaring the end, 46:10. Declaring the end from the beginning. And from ancient old times, the things that are not yet done. Not yet done, but he said them all. Saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. What I know and my wisdom to put it to work. I'm going to do what I do, whether humans like it, don't like it, come or go. My plan stays in effect. And David will die, and Moses dies, and David dies, and Paul dies. But the plan, God's plan is never has a problem. God doesn't need anything or anyone to make his plan work. By that I mean, God happens to be sovereign and wonderfully knowing and having all wisdom. And having all the pieces all at once, all together. Think of having a 7 zillion quintrillion pieces of a puzzle and have them all together, all at once. Wow. That's what God has. So looking to God, trusting God. Thus, if you would. And God manifests to make, like in verse 10, God makes it clear, explains the end from the beginning. Psalm 56. All I'm doing is just bouncing around, letting you just have a sense. When you say God knows, I'm going to trust God because he knows. I'm not going to, what I know is too limited. What you know is too limited. So we're going to trust God. Thus, if you would, Psalm 56, picking up in verse 8 directly. Thou tellest my wanderings, put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? Do you not have every tear that I will ever shed? Do you not have them? You already know them. You already know them, God. You already know them. Now, in the light of that, and remember there are no tears, that's when you get in God's presence, in God's holy heaven, there are no tears. There are no tears. No tears. No, no more. Whole nother realm. Thus going, if you would, to 1 Samuel chapter 23. 1 Samuel chapter 23. David exercised for us this relationship to God. 1 Samuel chapter 23. Remember, Saul's after David. In verse 8. And Saul called all the people together to war, to go down, if you would, to Keilah, to besiege David and his men. And David knew that Saul secretly practiced mischief against him. And he said to Abithiah the priest, bring hither the ephod. Remember, the ephod is the way that they determined the will of God. Verse 10, then said David, O Lord God of Israel, thy servant hath certainly heard that Saul seeketh to come to Keilah to destroy the city for my sake. Will the men of Keilah deliver me up into his hand? Will Saul come down as thy servant hath heard? O God, are the men in this place going to get us, betray us? Is Saul going to come down and get us? The middle of verse 11, O Lord God of Israel, I beseech thee, tell thy servant. And the Lord said, he will come down. Then said David, will the men of Keilah deliver me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will deliver thee up. So, David, God, you know what, I'm looking, here's my future. If I go, what's going to happen? Well, am I going to get the men? Is Saul? Yep, he's coming down. And so David got out of there, verse 13. And David and his men, which were about 600, arose and departed out of Keilah and went whithersoever they could. They got out of the way. God told them. David was smart enough to look to God, trust God. God, help me. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts, etc. See if there be any what wicked way in me, because I'm going down this corridor. And David said, I'm going to practice it. I practiced it. I looked to God. I said, God, help me to know. Help me to know the way. Thus, with that little bit in mind, God knows the thoughts. God knows the reasonings. God knows the motives. What everyone does and why they do it. God knows that. He knows before. He knows beforehand. And knowing beforehand is not causative. It's not causative. God's knowing is not the cause. Not the cause. God's will is direct, and he makes things happen directly. God's will allows things to happen. God makes things to happen. He allows things to happen. And in the light of his wonderful will, God is wonderfully holy. God is perfectly at liberty to do whatever his wisdom and knowledge decide. God is absolutely sovereign to make it work. God exercises his knowledge, and God exercises his thoughts. God does that. He is free to do. He has free action to do, to take place, everything to take place, because they are all foreseen. And they are foreseen, because they will take place. God sees everything as it is, and thus he knows it. He doesn't make it happen. He already knows it's happened. And then he has his allowance and his will. God sees everything all at once as it will be. And God has a limit. God has a limit to how long Babylon will be in control, how long Media Persia is in control, how long. God knows what will happen. God knows if you wait more than 120 years with Noah, God knows. God knows. He understands, and he's very free, very flexible, and everything he knows, and he puts it all together in his knowledge and wisdom, and that which he knows, which is out, which he knows, and his knowing is not the cause. God lets things go. God gives free will. God gives future events, and God knows the future events, and God's knowledge takes them into account. Doesn't make the future events. He knows the future events. He knows them. And as they outwork themselves in the decisions people make, the free will they have, God's wonderful knowledge, God's wonderful foreknowledge exercises itself in a wonderful way. And God is doing. God is wonderfully going, knowing everything, doing everything. And he has all the pieces all at once. And people have a free will and everything, but only so far. You can't just go on and on and on and on and on. The wages of sin is death. There's certain rules and limitations. And thus mankind looks at God and the foreknowledge. Mankind looks at foreknowledge from a human point of view. And there's a time. There's a time between the knowing of something and the event that is known. There's a time and when you know and then when it happens. So there's a space. With God there is no space, but for us there's a space. Look over, if you would, over in Jonah chapter 3. And in Jonah chapter 3, may I pick up, please, in verse 4. Remember now, human has a distance. When you speak of foreknowledge from our window, we say this, we know this, and then time takes place, and we know this. That isn't true for God. Here is Jonah making a statement from both windows, chapter 3 and in verse 4. Jonah began to enter into the city Nineveh, a day's journey, and he cried and said, 40 days and Nineveh shall be overthrown. 40 days and Nineveh shall, that's God's word. God said 40, for Jonah, he has to wait 40 days. Here's Jonah, and as far as Jonah's concerned, he has to wait 40 days for the judgment of God. God sees that all at once. There's no time space at all. But from a human standpoint, God says something, and then humans have a space between when they hear it, when they understand it, and when it happens, a space. So all of human history. Thus, with that little bit in mind, keeping in mind that Socinian doctrine back there, Italian reformer, 1500s, 1537, there about 1600. He denied the Trinity. He denied the deity of Christ. He denied immortality. He denied sin, denied salvation, and was very rationalistic. Thus, man's free will is not subject to natural laws. It cannot be predicted or foreknown. And therefore, Peter's denial was totally out of his hands. And Judas's betrayal is totally out of his hands because they don't know. They don't know. The Methodist, where I was raised, a Methodist, Methodist theology. How many Methodists understand Methodist theology? How many anyone understands any theology? And thus, Methodist theology, quoting, us the denial of absolute divine foreknowledge. They do not believe that God knows. God knows. God knows. God doesn't know what's going to happen. God doesn't know it. And he's waiting to see what's going to happen. What are humans going to do? How's the weather going to be? He's waiting. A.J. Gordon, great teacher, thinker. He said it is like a train rushing down the tracks in darkness. No headlights, no engineer. Just going. Going with no headlights, no engineer. Down a road. That's what Methodists, that's what this doctrine was. And it's still there today. It's out there, it gets out, and different people put out stuff. You don't bother chasing everything. And, you know, that God couldn't possibly know what's going to happen. God doesn't know what's going to happen. And therefore, God has to sit and wonder what's going to happen, what people will do. He doesn't know what people will do. Now, that's the thinking. And that's a theological thinking. And that's out there. People pick it up because they aren't locked in. You have to lock yourself in like a tree. You let your roots get down into God, in the beginning God, and you lock your roots down in there. And when your roots, if the tree's rooted, the wind can blow and the rain and the everything, the bugs, the disease, and the tree doesn't move. It just stays there. Most people have no roots doctrinally. They don't have any roots. They say something. In fact, we're going to do it to remind you what. Well, do you understand that if you're not interested in doctrine, truth, God's instructions, if you're not, you really don't want to know what Ezekiel 38 is about. You don't need to know. It doesn't matter to you. There are a lot, if you take this little thought, Jim, you'll have some good discernment. How much do people want to know what God really said about anything? Really want to know? Now you ask yourself that question. And the measure and degree they want to know is how much they will listen to teaching. Do you understand? What we're doing right now is not popular if you don't want to know. It won't happen. People don't want to. And that's what I watch. History, you know. You don't ever say anything. You repeat everything over and over again. I don't get anything anymore out of you anymore. I don't understand. I've had so many people. Once I hear that from them, aha, I got the message. I got it, you see. And I have to be careful. I don't repeat everything, though you need to repeat some stuff. And I want to be careful I don't repeat everything. But some of it needs to be repeated. It's repeated till it locks in. God repeats it over and over again. God does. Thus, you know, that's like the person that said, how come you tell us to need to be born again? Well, because you what? You need to be born again. That's why. I mean, the last thing, why do you need to believe? Because you needed to believe yesterday. You still need to believe. You see? So the less you're interested in knowing, understanding God's wonderful wisdom and knowledge, then you aren't going to pay attention to the teaching. And that will help you very much to understand humanity, you see. And if you miss what I just said, then that's part of the problem, you see. They don't want to know. You don't want to know what God, you don't want to know what God really said. And that's what I'm going to be governed by. God, I want to know. Thus, if you would, with that in mind. Oh, God doesn't know. God couldn't know. Yes, he does. Psalm 94. And as you pick up just general discernment, you'll know a lot of things about yourself and about people. And you won't get hung up with people because you understand. You're already picking up. You aren't going on the surface. You're going down where the nitty-gritty is. What's the problem? What is the problem? Why don't you want to get saved? There must be a reason why you don't want to get saved, isn't there? Or else there'd be what? There'd be saved. You understand? if they wanted to be saved. Does God want them saved? Does God want them saved now? Sure he does. Then why aren't they saved? Because they don't want to be saved now. Why don't you want to understand? Because I don't want to understand. And you don't. That's all. Psalm 94, minus 2. Psalm 94, picking up in verse 8. Understand ye brutish, remember brutish, our English word is stupid. Understand ye brutish among the people and ye fools, when will you be wise? When will you be wise? He that planted the ear, shall he not hear? He that formed the eye, shall he not see? He that chasteneth the heathen, the nations, shall not he correct? He that teacheth man knowledge, shall he not know? The Lord knoweth the thoughts of man, that they are vanity. Blessed is the man whom thou chastenest, O Lord, and teachest him out of thy law. God, we're going to pay a little more attention to who you are. God is greater than all our knowing. God is all-knowing. God is all-seeing. God is all-seeing all at once. Another simple illustration you'll remember. Just think of a cannon. Think of a big cannon firing. And the cannon fires, and the light flashes. The sound is heard. The shell travels, and the shell explodes, right? We see it. We hear it. We wait while it goes through the air. And we wait, and then we know, because it explodes. That's us. But that isn't true for God. God sees the light, hears, watches it go through the sky and explode all at once. We have to wait for that sequence. And that's why God says what? Wait on the Lord and be of good courage, relax, because what I already have, you have to wait to see. You know that wonderful, wonderful truth in Hebrews chapter 10. In a chapter 10, you know it. I could tell it to you, but why not lock onto it? Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. And picking up, please. In the light of the cannon, the light, the noise, the waiting, and the explosive. Hebrews chapter 10, picking up verse 35. Cast not away therefore your confidence, free, bold, fearlessness, which hath great recompense of reward. For you have need of patience, bearing up under waiting, enduring, that after you have done the will of God, you might receive the promise. You have to wait. You do what I tell you to do. You believe and rest in who I am, and then you wait. You, the cannon, the light, the sound, the waiting, the explosive. We have to go through that. God doesn't. God already knows it. So you relax. You relax and you wait. You say, well, here's my prayer. Here's the item. Here's the issue. True, true. And then the outworking, the clock has to tick by, the day, the hours, the sun rises and sets, and you have to wait. But God isn't waiting, and we know that God is what? Isn't waiting. So we relax that God isn't waiting, and we know in his all-wise wisdom, he works all things. You know the great truth, what? All things work together for good to them that are loving God. You're looking for God's will. That's what you're doing. And God does that. Wonderfully does that. Now, having said that, would you go over with me, please, over to Acts 15. Acts chapter 15. And in Acts 15, again, trying to get it so you can get a handle on it, have it. Solomon, what are you trying to get us to understand? That our wisdom and knowledge is minuscule. Chapter 15, Acts. Going directly to verse 18. Known unto God are all his works from the beginning of the world. God knows everything from the very beginning. And the believers in the New Testament needed to understand what they understood in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31. Picking up, God knows. Chapter 31, Deuteronomy, verse 20. I'll even read verse 19. Now therefore write ye this song for you, and teach it to the children of Israel. Put it in their mouth, that this song may be a witness for me against the children of Israel. Verse 20. For when I shall have brought them into the land which I swear unto their fathers, and that floweth with milk and honey, and they shall have eaten and filled themselves, and waxen fat, then will they turn unto other gods, and serve them, and provoke me, and break my covenant. They haven't got there, but I'm telling you what they're going to do when they get there. I'm already going to tell you what they're going to do. Thus, you pick up a little bit the prophetic connection. Verse 21. And it shall come to pass, when many evils and troubles are befallen them, that this song shall testify against them as a witness. For it shall not be forgotten out of the mouths of their seed. For I know their imagination, which they go about even now, before I have brought them into the land which I swear. I already know what they're doing. I already know what they think. I already know what they're going to do. I already know what they're going to do. God said, I know. Thus, if you would, Isaiah 44. And you know Matthew 24, remember they asked the Lord, what's going to happen? And God could tell them what's going to happen. And God did tell them. He told them everything that they needed to know about the tribulation, about what's going to be the millennium, God, the church age. God tells us. Thus, Isaiah 44. In Isaiah chapter 44, let us pick up, please, in verse 26. 44:26. That confirmeth the word of his servant, and performeth the counsel of his messengers, thus that saith to Jerusalem, Thou shalt be inhabited, and to the cities of Judah ye shall be built, and I will raise up the decayed place thereof. It's all going to go down. It's all going to come back up again. Be of good cheer. 45 verse 7. I form the light and create evil, darkness. I make peace and create evil. I cause it to come, trouble. The consequences, we shared it in the conference. So you would see, where is the problem? What is the problem people have with being human? And here in God said, if you take of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you're going to know something. When you violate God's holy, happy, wonderful, heavenly purpose, plan, place, then you do that, then there's trouble. And it's no blessing. It's evil. It's not good. Heartache, headache, sorrow, sin, death, suffering. When you violate that, the day they eat of the tree of the good and tree, they're going to die, and they have evil. God said, I told you what's on the other side of the coin. When you violate, and the Lucifer, son of the morning, has already found that out when he sinned. Thus you're going to know, I create evil. I told you, if you go on that side, you go opposite light, you're left with darkness. And that's what you have, and that's what you're going to have to work with, go with, think about, etc. Would you go over me, please, to Psalm 81? Psalm 81. God knows. We have our choices. We make choices all kinds of times. God, we do them. And God knows them. Psalm 81. And if you end Psalm 81, I just passed Proverbs 16. Do you want to hold your finger there in 81? Lord willing, we'll get back there. Psalm 81, Proverbs chapter 16. Great section, that whole section's a lovely section. So you can put together, keep it, God, you let evil, you let it happen, you bet. And God said, listen, I have allowed evil. I have allowed unbelief. And I want you to know a Pharaoh will challenge me and I'll show my power, my sovereignty. I'll let him. He isn't going to believe. Pharaoh isn't going to believe. But I'm going to leave him. I know he isn't going to believe. He could, but he doesn't want to. Pharaoh will say, I know not the Lord. I don't know your God. Thus, Proverbs 16 and verse 4. The Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil. God allows them all to exist. You say, how can God allow so much wrong? God said, listen, I created it. I allowed it to happen. And that's why it's going where it's going and going to come out the way it is. I already know that. I would have never let something start that wasn't going to come out right. And I already did that. So if you're going to say, well, how could God let all this terrible things happen? And they do. Wow. God said, I let it happen. And I do it. I'm going to be glorified in it. I'm going to be glorified. What's the a message of a whole list of messages? What's one of them? One of them is what? I told you, if you don't honor me and don't believe, you're going to pay a price. You reap what you want. So, do you understand? Now prove that. All right, God said, I'm not just going to sow good seed. Let me show you what bad seed does. You either sow good seed or bad seed. I'll show you both. So all humans are looking like this, at good seed and bad seed. And now you make a choice. Do you want to have good seed or bad seed? Do you want to have it come out right or wrong? You say, well, no one knows. God knows. And that's why we trust the God who knows in a way that honors God. Anyway, I trust you got a little bit, and thank you.